Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin, the podcast.
Here we go again. Good Wednesday morning. We're a day away from week 11 of the NFL season with a huge game in the NFC West between the Arizona Cardinals and the Seattle Seahawks. But here we are on a Wednesday morning. Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin presented by Progressive Insurance. Homie. What up? That is the voice of Keyshawn Johnson. Let's hear the voice of Bart Scott. Good morning, Bart.
What up? My name's Shemp now. You know what I'm saying? I'm like the cousin from the Three Stooges. I'm Shemp whenever y'all invite me over.
It's great to hear your voice and great to have you here to round out our three. J. Will join us in the 8 o'clock Eastern hour. Today's the NBA draft on ESPN at 8 Eastern, and he's knee-deep in that, but we'll talk to Jay at 8 Eastern. So, fellas, Seahawks, Cardinals, big game, everyone hyped, short week. What can Murray do? More Murray magic off the Hail Mary.
I see what
but
you did there.
All of that.
The Hail Murray?
No.
The short.
The short.
That's the short and long of it. But even though that game's on the horizon, Russ and Kyler MVP talk, we are starting this morning talking about a team that has two wins, has a 5% chance to win the division, and is 100% always front and center. Keyshawn, do you know this team better than anyone else? It's the Dallas Cowboys. You played for them. You played for Jerry Jones. Jerry, edging
his way. We had a full stadium when I played, though.
Right now, it's a 25,000, which is about a quarter capacity. It's a 100,000-seat stadium. This is from Jerry. You may have heard it here in the intro. Just a couple snippets. Quote, "My plan was to increase our fans as we went through the season, and we followed that plan. We've had almost a third of the attendance in the NFL. I'm proud of that. Our stadium is particularly suited for airness, openness, air circulation." Going on to say, "Some people will say it is, but not when you're doing it as safe as we are and not when we're having the results we're having. Literally, we have had no one report they have had gotten any contact with COVID from coming to our football game." And he is using that rationale to say he slowly wants to ramp up, not down, ramp up the attendance at Cowboys games, by far leading the league in attendance. Remember, when your stadium is that big, your percentage of fans that can enter can be larger.
Yeah, it's just an ouch at this moment. If we were not in a spike with the pandemic.
A little tone deaf here.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't necessarily say tone deaf. I would just more say his explanation to why he wants to do it and not really explaining fully and just why. You know, he didn't really explain why. And I think for him, he has to understand, well, take a look around you. Take a look around the country, the world. As we continue in states, Texas, Florida, you name it, New York, L.A., you just name it, as cities and states continue to spike up, as mayors and governors and elected officials try to bring things down, you want to increase the attendance. I would be on board if that wasn't the case. But the case is, that's probably not a good idea as of right now, Bart, to be thinking about. How about this? Think about getting the damn W first. Think about getting a win before you start to worry about who might want to come into the stadium to see another L.
Well, that's easier said than done, right? So he says, you know what? I got to win in something, so I can't win on the field, so let me win in attendance. He's a competitive guy, but what I'm saying is, talk about tone deaf. I think it is tone deaf because when you look into Texas itself, It passed a million cases.
Well, see, the reason I say it's not tone deaf because he ain't paying attention to that.
Yeah,
that ain't even.
Yeah, he's choosing not to pay attention.
Yeah, so it's not really even tone deaf because he's not acknowledging it and he's not paying attention to it.
And it's hard when you think about, you know, we don't know if anybody's contracted COVID from going to their game.
Just because they didn't report.
Right, just because they didn't report. So he's using the data that he wants. You know, we always say numbers. You can say use numbers in any way you want to. I hope that they're using the misters because that's been something that's been, you know, revolutionary. The fact that they have the drones that kind of sprays disinfectant throughout. I understand that he has the ability to pull the roof back and he can use the circulation, but it's just tone deaf with what we're going through right now. And we know Jerry's all about money, right? Last I checked, like, the Dallas Cowboys are the only ones that's not in the union, right? They're kind of separate to use their own branding, separate from the NFL. And Jerry's a great businessman. And he understands this opportunity. He understands that's 40% of the revenue. So he's trying to make sure that he can make, not that he needs it, because it's the most valuable franchise in all of North America, but, you know, businessmen do what businessmen do.
It's amazing because my COVID expert in Jay Will is not here with me at this moment, but we certainly could have the conversation when he joins us at 8 o'clock.
But I'm good with you though, because I was talking with Alan Sills and all those guys during the COVID task force.
So. Dr. Alan Sills, the NFL's chief medical officer.
I love when Zubin do that, man.
But that's important to
Dr. Sills. I'm just saying my COVID expert, because as soon as we talk about COVID, you know, Jay Will, bam, he started to get into it. I really don't, like, for me, it's just like I really don't understand what's right and what's wrong, right? Yeah. Because it's amazing when you talk about restaurants in the capacity of the restaurants that could have to be at a certain capacity.
Yeah.
And then when you look outdoors, they say, well, we don't really want to, in certain states, they don't really want people inside the restaurants in a closed environment, but they're building tents outside for you to sit and eat in, which has walls up in this closed environment.
Yeah.
So everything is a little confusing. So when you go back into the Jerry situation, it's like, okay, you got 25,000 people. You want to increase it another 6,000 or 7,000 to a capacity of around 32,000 or so in that area. For what, with the last three games at home or four games at home that you may have, what is the reasoning? Now, if he would have said, I was looking forward to doing this as this virus continued to, you know, go down, not increase in terms of the numbers, we wanted to do that, then I would be like, oh, okay, that makes a whole lot of sense. But thinking about doing it right now, come on, Jerry, man, you're smarter than this.
So this is what I'm trying to figure out. I'm trying to figure out what the procedures is, because, you know, when I go over to the Jets, I get my my tracer, I go over, or sometimes when you go to restaurants, even now, they ask you for your name and your phone number.
Yes.
So in case they have to contact Trace. Mm-hmm. That's hard to do with 25,000 people. So I'm trying to figure out, are they buying the tickets online and that somebody's going to give them their name where they can contact if it is a spike?
That's Zubin,
because that's the responsible thing to do, like to be able to say, okay, if you're going to come to the game, you're going to buy our tickets. I'm assuming that they're sitting in clusters and you're coming with people that you know, and then you're socially distanced from the other people. Like, are you going to be able to contract Trace and get information so if it is a spike, you can reach out to those people? And how do you do that?
I haven't bought tickets this year online or anything to go to any games, but I would think, much like you said, how do you figure out the tracing part of it? Is it a situation where you buy them online, like when you go to a movie theater,
Ticketmaster
or something like that, one of those ticket outlets where you buy online and you get whatever group, you know, those spacing? Because when you think about it, it's like, how are these stadiums that are having fans selecting where the fans go to sit?
Right.
Like, if Zubin's buying tickets in row one in seat A, B, C, and D, well, who has the other four seats next to him or the other four seats behind him? Is that something that online, at the contact tracing, that you have to input the information, much like when you go into a restaurant?
And how much are owners investing in contact tracing? Because we know that's a thing within itself, to be able to reach out to everybody. You talk about 25,000 fans. You know, some could be from Texas, but some could be from somewhere else. And you talk about, in the midst of a spike, going out and being able to spread. And we know that it comes from people that trust each other, right? So you look at the pictures of the stadium, and they're sitting next to each other. People have their masks down. They're talking to each other. They're getting excited. So it's like, well, usually when you contract COVID, it's from someone that you know.
It's a funny thing, and this is not a laughing matter, but it's hilarious, because the people, as Thick Neck said, sitting next sitting next to each other and behind each other, and we were looking at the monitor there, and you can't tell me the people that was behind the other people, they know each other. They didn't come to the game together whatsoever. They don't even look like remotely they would know each other. But the people in front didn't have any mask on at all, and it was only two people behind that had mask on. The other guy is eating, and they're literally like, you know, the space in between the seats, they're literally right next to each other.
Exactly.
And I'm sitting there going, no, that's not a, that doesn't feel good.
Yeah, exactly.
It doesn't feel good at all. But, you know,
Jerry's a great businessman.
Yeah, but in this situation, it shouldn't be about business.
Right.
It should be about health.
My point. But, you know, is it even a competitive advantage for them to have fans in there? I mean,
it's state by state.
I would think
Kansas City has fans.
Yeah.
It's just state by state. Some fans are in Florida, I believe.
Florida's his own world.
Well, but I'm just saying, state by state, you know.
Last two things very quickly. One on the business part of it, and that is the secondary ticket market is absolutely crashing, because while 25,000 people might want to come to Cowboys games, there are fans across the league that are saying, if you gave me a seat on the 50-yard line, I wouldn't go. So a lot of those secondary ticket markets where you go to get the last second ticket, they are hurting – badly. One fact, Jerry dealing in notions and opinions about the COVID. One fact, Andy Dalton back at practice after 3 weeks being out on Monday. Mike McCarthy said he looked great. He's a true pro. They're expecting him to start on Sunday when the Dallas Cowboys take on the Minnesota Vikings. Still to come, one NFL team that might be glad there aren't any fans in attendance, unlike the Cowboys games this season. We'll get to that.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We all go through things socially where we don't feel like ourselves, where we don't feel like going out, where we feel drained, or we're not bursting with energy. And when you're not feeling right, that's where BetterHelp can come in. It's helpful for learning positive coping skills, how to set boundaries in so many different ways, for which it empowers you to be the best version of yourself. It isn't just for those who experience major trauma. Therapy is for more than those people, and it's there to help you. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. It's there for you. It's there to help you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/unsportsmanlike today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/unsportsmanlike.
That's Dave Pasch, the voice of the Arizona Cardinals. He couldn't believe it, and neither could anyone in Bills Mafia. Kyler Murray hurling at 43 yards to the end zone. DeAndre Hopkins draped by three Buffalo Bills defenders comes down with it. Key is shaking his head three days after it happened.
I don't get it though, man. Let me ask you as a defensive player, Mark, because I've been the jump guy in those situations. Yeah. I've been the jump guy in those situations in the 2 minute. And both on the offense and the defensive side have actually probably had more interceptions in my career in the NFL than you do in yours. But
disrespectful.
But what would you do in that situation from a defensive standpoint?
Well, the problem is defenders can't really track the ball. You saw that the other defender jumped too early. And, you want to wait as a defender. You want to wait for the guy to come down. So you don't really want to jump with him. You want to put your arms through his arms, and as he comes down, you just snatch the ball out. But what happens is they jump too early, and they try to jump with him, right? He high-pointed the ball because he can see the ball the whole time. The defenders are all looking back. See, they can't track the ball. Like, receivers are great at tracking the ball because they're used to running down and looking up. So I guarantee you somebody could have lost in the lights. But when you look when they jump, you wait for him to come down. Instead of the guy jumping, he should have stayed planted. So when he comes down, you just snatch the ball.
Yeah, you can't jump backwards.
And what happens is he took it back to his body. I mean, you got to have some strong hands to be able to get the ball back to your body.
But I don't even start there, though. That's not even it. I start at the point of attack.
We're pressing the hell out of him, too.
At the line of scrimmage.
We're pressing with people behind. I don't understand. I hate when they do that. You can't allow the guy to get down there because it's a timing play. You know that it's got to be a scramble. And if you're the edge setter, you never leave the edge. You stay there. You make him have to throw up and throw from the well. You never, ever, like, get past quarterback depth. You don't try and go for the sack. You set the edge, and you wait knowing that he has to scramble because it's a 40-yard pass.
Yeah.
So he has to buy time to scramble outside the box. That was just horrible execution. And then now they're forever posterized. And then it's like crazy because now you got the Jordan logo on somebody's head, but they playing football, but you just got dunked on.
I don't understand. Bad execution. I don't know what Sean McDermott. And I'm happy for D-Hop, and I'm happy for Kyler Murray, but – I don't understand what McDermott and Leslie Frazier were thinking.
We're all familiar. We knew where the ball was going.
Absolutely.
Right? You know, Larry Fitzgerald in his advanced age, it would have took him forever to get down
there.
Well,
they had him at the point of attack.
Right.
They had him.
So I don't understand. Like, you don't need linebackers. Because that intermediate defender doesn't matter. So why won't you go out there with six DBs and then vice like Bill Belichick used to do with Gonzalez? You put two people on, it's like a punt protection. He would have never got off the line because I would have put one person on each shoulder and I would have jammed the hell out of him with safeties over the top. Why do you have linebackers in there? You should have DBs and you should put an extra line. You always put a lineman to spy. I mean, a linebacker or DB to spy. So then when he breaks contain, you go and figure out which way that he's going so he has to pull up. And that's just bad execution. It cost them, you know, a win, and now they're going to be in a tight race in the AFC East, and they're going to have to deal with potentially with a surging Miami Dolphins. And on the other side, you know, now Kyler Murray, the Air Murray, you know, now they're feeling good, and now they're in a legitimate race to win the division when we thought that Seattle was going to run away with it.
Indeed. Speaking of the AFC East, Bart just mentioned them a moment ago, exactly where Buffalo stands right now after that brain lock by head coach Sean McDermott and defensive coordinator Leslie Frazier, as Key said. Our Twitter question this morning on the Dr. Pepper Twitter feed, simple. Who wins the AFC East? Pats? Dolphins? Be a part of Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin Nation on the Dr. Pepper Twitter feed. Those are the two obvious choices, Pats, Dolphins, and obviously we got to throw the Bills in there as well, right? ESPN Nation presented by Dr. Pepper. It's official. College football's back. So is your favorite Dr. Pepper-loving college football town, Fansville. Head to a store near you to treat your inner college football fan to an ice-cold 20-ounce Dr. Pepper today. Who wins the AFC East? Pats, Dolphins, Bills. Back to the NFC West. It's a logjam. You have three teams sitting at 6-3, as Bart mentioned, including the two that'll kick off Week 11 of the NFL season tomorrow night. Seattle, with all due respect to the Kansas City fans, tremendous home field advantage, the home of the 12th man. No fans there tomorrow night, but there will be precipitation. Surprise, surprise. 60% chance of rain. Key, Arizona going into Seattle off the win over the Seahawks on Sunday Night Football a couple weeks ago in overtime. If Kyler Murray wins this game for the first, I don't know, 4 or 5 weeks of the season, everybody said Russell Wilson, MVP, yeah, it's overdue. Yeah. Kyler creeping into the conversation. He had his quote-unquote moment on Sunday. If they go there, win, sweep the season series, and are in outright first place first thing Friday morning, how different are we looking at Kyler Murray?
Well, you know, when you do these MVP conversations with young guys, or even older guys for that matter, there's always, during the course of the season, there's something, there's a signature moment, something, a big game that stands out for you. His momentum is carrying from the debacle of the Buffalo Bills loss to the Arizona win in the Kyler Murray throw to DeAndre Hopkins. He carries that into Seattle. If he gets out of Seattle with a W, that's three wins in the last three games, two in Seattle, one in Arizona against the Seahawks. Impressive. They will now become this team that people start to say, oh, okay. All they got to do is beat up on the Rams a little bit. They may be the team in the NFC West to start taking over that division. These are moments that kick a guy up a couple notches. If he loses, forget it. If he wins, now you start to look at it and go, okay, we understand Patrick Mahomes and Aaron Rodgers is there, but this guy is doing something magical and special that's catching our attention.
I just don't think that he can win it. It's like one of those things. You know how it is, even with the Pro Bowl. We have players that are deserving of the Pro Bowl, but, you know, the fans.
But his numbers, though, are good.
Yeah, yeah. But what I'm saying, you know how it is. The fans wait, make you do it twice in a row.
Yeah.
Right? So, like, even though they go there, you know, sometimes MVP can be a lifetime achievement award, right? And it's all about, you know, carrying the momentum. Now, he has momentum, but, you know, you have Aaron Rodgers, you have Russell Wilson. If he can turn this thing around and win it, then he puts it.
Russell probably toast.
But you understand, we all know that, you know, everything happens in the NFL November, December. You know, it's not about what you do in the first couple months. Anybody can go to a fast start. So, head to head, if he looks better than and carries his team, because I think that, you know, Arizona has a more complete team. Right? Because, I mean, Seattle might have the worst defense. How Ken Norton even is still employed and survive past the bye week is amazing to me, because it is hard to be this damn bad in defense. They're giving up almost 400 yards a game, Key. 400 yards. You talk about a team that has Dunlap, has Bobby Wagner, Jamal Adams, and Griffin. Those should be enough to not make you the worst in the league. Arguably, this might be the worst defense I've ever seen. When you have an offense this good, and you're going to be playing with a lead, you should be able to kind of, like, not just be horrible. Now, I remember Peyton Manning used to have some of the worst defenses ever. But, man, they knew how to play when they had an offense and a lead. The games in which Seattle loses, they'd be having, like, 34 points on the board.
But Peyton had a bend-don't-break defense.
Sure. But then bend-don't-break. They got a broken defense.
Last word, Pete Carroll, 69 years old, made his chops in the NFL on defense. So the fact that his defense is playing this terribly is notable. The one name we didn't mention that we should in the last 15 seconds, Cliff Kingsbury, 35-40 in college. People were wondering why he got an NFL head coaching opportunity. Yeah. He was the offensive coordinator at USC slightly longer than Bill Belichick coached the Jets.
We signed him. We didn't use him.
But people said, what is this guy doing in the pros? Couldn't win with Patrick Mahomes in college. Can't field the defense. It's the Big 12. He hasn't finished the job, but you got to give this guy a little bit of credit. On the way, the Bears have a quarterback situation. Yes, they have a huge problem there.
Situation.
But it's not the guy that's throwing the ball that might have the biggest problem injury-wise. It's one of the dudes catching it that's sounding off, and that's a way bigger story in Chicago. Wait till you hear this.
Have you ridden an electric e-bike yet? You need to check out Electric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to spend more time exploring outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range or up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus, Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting electricebikes.com. That's L-E-C-T-R-I-C ebikes.com.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Fellas are watching the broadcast.
What the hell is he breathing for? Like he's taking deep breaths.
Man, the man is in pain. Bart, stop.
Bruh, listen.
Stop, Bart. You don't play football no more. Stop.
I'm empathetic. Listen. What you had to deal with a couple of weeks ago with your ankle was more severe than what the hell his diagnosis is. If you read the clips,
stop, it said, man. Leave that man alone.
When you read the clips, it said fracture, this and that, bruise, fracture, tear. Are you thinking it's done? You praying for him, man. Prayers up to Nick Foles. You hear everybody. Prayers up to Nick Foles. A bruise.
Boy.
Man, if you don't take some Advil and put some ice and put a girdle on with a hip pad in it, man, get the hell out of here.
Bart, stop.
Come on, man.
You're not the opponent anymore.
Bro.
We have a job to do here on ESPN.
Oh, you're supposed to have empathy.
The man would look like
he was crying.
Stop.
Don't cry in football. And if it's crying, something better be broken, need to be amputated.
Well, here's what I would say. I certainly thought that he had got killed, K-I-L-T. But then when I learned that it was a hip pointer, I'm like, okay, well, maybe it was tight and stiff. Couldn't walk off the field. So, you know, but
this is a quick.
I'm trying to soften it up, man. I don't.
Bro.
You know what I'm saying, Zubin? I got my guy linebacker Bart over here, man. Just going ham on the man. Stop.
Listen, Ben takes five of these hits a game. Like, come on, man. I don't want to hear this. Ben Roethlisberger had no kneecaps. He played the next week.
He's probably going to be able to play after the bye.
Son.
Nick Foles will probably be able to play after the bye.
But, bro, he is crying, and he got a bone bruise. Drew Brees is talking.
Well, Drew
Brees. He's talking to Peyton on the sideline. He got four cracked ribs and a puncture, and he's talking. He's crying for a hip bruise.
That's
what are
cold.
We talking about?
Man, you cold, man.
Man, come
it's
on.
It's just,
man.
I get Wentworth, it.
Wentworth tore everything in his knee.
I get everybody's built different.
He built real different.
I mean, he has a history of injuries, and so I'm sure it scared him, and he probably said, not again. I'm just trying to.
You know who Nick Foles is? He the dude screaming, I'm drowning, I'm drowning. Somebody say, hey, stand up. Oh, all I had to do was
stand
up.
Will you get us out of this, Z, please?
Yes, I'll try to. All right, listen, for those that just aren't familiar with what happened, Foles goes down on Monday Night Football.
You got a boo-boo.
It's a leg and a hip injury or a boo-boo. Nagy comes out and says the next day on a Tuesday, it's a little better than we expected.
Really?
To Key's point, the Bears do have a bye week. They got the Green Bay Packers coming out of the bye. So right now, Foles is on the mend. Trubisky has a bit of a shoulder injury. Here's Matt Nagy, Bears head coach, for the moment, on his thoughts about his quarterbacks.
When you lose four games in a row, it's all on the table. Everything's out there. So, but the number one thing with Nick and with Mitch that we are concerned about right now is making sure that their health is the number one priority, and that'll be significant here moving forward.
So that's what he's essentially got to say. Essentially, they've lost four in a row, a bye, and then you got Green Bay coming out of the bye. All right, the big question here, a lot of people are simply saying, look, this is all on general manager Ryan Pace. He drafted Mitch Trubisky.
Yeah.
He brought in Nick Foles, but Key has an important distinction here.
Yes,
the reason they went out and they got Nick Foles is because his head coach, who was familiar with Foles, said, please go out and get it. So some of the blame here, while it's easy to put it on Foles and it's easy to put it on the GM, some of this has to go on Nagy because he asked for it, he got it, and now Foles is not coming through for him.
Look, the way it works in the NFL circles, and many circles in professional sports, is familiarity. Right. As you, what's the famous word that we're using now all over everybody? Truncated season.
Truncated season. Shortened season.
We're in a shortened season. Mm-hmm. And no offseason, no this, no that, no training camp, big-time training camp. So you want to get some familiarity. You want to get somebody who can come in and run your system. Matt Nagy certainly went to the general manager Pace and said to him, you know, here's a guy in Nick Foles that we both know, that we both kind of have seen in this league that understands the system. There are other quarterbacks that we can wait on, but we have to teach them and get them up to speed. So therefore, let's get a guy who we're familiar with that could teach our offense, not only to Mitch Trubisky, but also to the other players on the offensive side of the ball to help us be better. Well, guess what? It ain't working. And it didn't work. And so that falls on Matt Nagy. He vouched for a quarterback that's been, he's been around. And I'm sure he also picked up the phone and talked to some of his colleagues that have had Nick Foles and said, what do you think? And they probably said, Nick's right. I mean, that's a, you know what he is. And they said, okay, if things go wrong with Mitch Trubisky, which I would have never pulled him at 3-0, never ever in a million years, I'd have let him just continue to play into a point where we were not winning football games before I made that decision. When he made the decision to go to 3-0 and pull him, I mean, we're at 3-0 and they pull Mitch Trubisky, I scratched my head. Even though Mitch Trubisky wasn't playing great football, they were not losing. So that's always a problem when coaches do something that's kind of like out of left field. But when you go into the season already with your mind made up that you're not going to withstand your offense sputtering alone with Mitch Trubisky, your mind's made up already when you drafted, when you went out and acquired Nick Foles. You said to yourself, I'm not sitting around with Mitch Trubisky too long. You are, even though you were 3-0, you were not 1-2, you were 3-0. 3-0.
With a couple good rallies.
With a couple good rallies. So, you know.
Yeah, but Mitch Trubisky was playing horrible, and he caught
you
fire
was
in the second half. No, I get that. But, you know.
You don't disrupt something when you're winning.
I don't blame Matt Nagy for going out and getting a $4 million backup insurance policy. You know, I don't blame him for that.
But you don't need to cash in the insurance policy just quite yet.
Yeah, but even if you go back to Mitch Trubisky, he's going to remind you just how bad he is. The offense is limited. The problem is they've been acquiring bad picks. I mean, they had a questionable draft. I mean, the tight end they took from Notre Dame, we're like, what are you doing? Right? So you got to put the onus on the general manager as well. And Matt Nagy tried to go to with what he knew. But, you know, what he had to realize is that he brought in a backup quarterback that's a backup quarterback. I mean, we're talking about Nick Foles. He's the same guy that lost his job to a dude in jean shorts, which was a six-round draft pick. After they gave him a contract, they cut him. He lost his job to Minshew Mania in less than a year. So if you can't beat out Minshew, you shouldn't theoretically be able to beat out Mr. Trubisky.
But that's not it, though, Bart. It's not beating anybody out. When a head coach makes a decision, and we've all been there, whether it's Bill Parcells acquiring me from the Tampa Bay Buccaneers because he knew exactly what
he
was getting.
You go back to
or
what
whether
you know.
It was or whether it was Dan Hitting vouching for me to go to Carolina and being part of his offense at the Carolina Panthers, or whether it was Rex giving you a bag to come to New York from Baltimore.
Yeah.
Because they trust you, they know you, they understand that you can run the system and you're not going to let them down. And this is with Matt Nagy. If failed experience would have happened with Rex Ryan on you, all hell breaks loose. Mm-hmm. Same with me at teams that I've gone to, all hell break loose. People would be like, well, you brought this in, this is a bum, blah, blah, blah. That's the same thing for Matt Nagy. See, it's the same exact thing. You decided to make a decision after they hired you to fix Mitch Trubisky as an offensive guru specialist that was going to have an offense totaling 500 yards a game and all these points and this and that. It hasn't been that way. You won 12 games in your first year. Okay, we give you that. But since then, not so good.
That's half of his win total. That's He's half won 25
of,
games.
That's half of the win total.
Right, in 1 year.
In 1 year. So when people start saying, well, he is 25-17, miss me with that. Yeah. Stop that notion that he's 25-17. Just stop that.
But the issue is Ryan Pace, right? Because he's the one that brought Mr. Trubisky in and not go with Deshaun Watson, not go with Patrick Mahomes.
That is so true. But we also hired you to fix our damn defense, and you didn't do it. I'm talking about Bart Scott. I also hired you to now, as this great defensive player, this linebacker, to run the defense.
Yeah.
We drafted somebody for you to fix, and you didn't do it. Yeah. So now you come to me and you say, hey, I like Ray Lewis. I play with Ray Lewis. I know what Ray Lewis is all about. Even though he's old and he's beat up, I want Ray Lewis. So with me as the general manager, Keyshawn, I say, okay, we're going to sign Ray Lewis. See, and then all of a sudden, every team in the damn country knows that Ray Lewis is on the team. Guess what they're getting ready to do? They're getting ready to run right at Ray. That's not my fault. No. It's your fault.
I get that, but Matt Nagy got Nick Foles as a backup. A backup for $4 million, he's probably
but
one
he really
of the best.
Didn't get him as a backup.
But I know he wanted somebody to come in and push. Just like no different from them going to bring in Flacco because Joe Douglas had familiarity with Flacco to push Sam Darnold. You wanted some type of veteran there, maybe.
Different, though.
Yeah, but you wanted a veteran maybe that can push a young quarterback and maybe say, you know, give him some knowledge and be a mentor at the same time. And you know that Nick Foles can come in. Like I said, Nick Foles is like wine, right? He's good in moderation. When you have to depend on him, he'll let you down. We know his record. You know, he's been on seven teams or six teams. We know what he is. But what he brought him in to be a backup, a capable backup, and to push Trubisky. And Trubisky let him down and showed him very early in the process that he's not going to be able to it's not another level to Mitchell Trubisky, right? He is not another level. He's going to fall in the same category as Blaine Gabbert, as Blake Bortles. He's going to fall in the same category as Locker. All those guys that have potential that they reached for and overdrafted that fell short.
Last note here, just got to mention it. We talked about it a little bit earlier. Not only do they have a problem at the quarterback position, the guys the quarterbacks are throwing to, including their top target, Allen Robinson.
You'll look good in green next year, baby.
You had his agent, Brandon Parker, tweeting on Monday night during the game with the Bears' offensive struggles, quote, should he not be the first read in the red zone 99% of the time? His agent, Brandon Parker, went on to tweet, only team in the league that won't throw it to the wide receiver one, WR1, in the red zone. Same guy who's leading the league in contested catches. What's really going on? So that's another big issue here in Chicago.
That's pretty tricky. He's playing the game, and he had his agent do that. That's real slick.
Right.
See, but also the thing is he wants an extension. He wants to be compensated, and they haven't paid him yet, so let him go if you're not going to use him.
Indeed. There was a talk about a possible Allen Robinson trade. Allen actually joined us on Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin a couple months ago and essentially said that's off the table. All is good. A reminder, we're presented by Progressive Insurance. Buster Olney joins us now on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line, brought to you by Shell V-Power Nitro Plus Premium Gasoline. Buster is really here to talk about another team in Chicago and a huge move that was made in their front office yesterday. We're going to get to that with Buster in just 1 second. But Buster is an avid listener to the program. We do know that. And you want to chime in, good morning, Buster, on Bart being maybe a little too hard on Nick Foles. Go ahead, Buster. We'll talk Cubs in a second.
Yeah, I covered the Giants for a year, the New York Giants, and so I it was absolutely eye-opening to me how different baseball and football are when it comes to peers expecting the others around them to play. Much more pointed, much tougher. In baseball, pitcher says he's got a sore arm, teammates go, okay, you know, that's probably what he's dealing with. In the NFL, no. Get out there, suit up, post up.
It's a boo-boo, Buster. Like, yeah. Come on. He's crying. And it turned out to be a bruise.
Will you stop?
It's not a torn labrum in the hip.
Yeah, Buster, I thought he got kilt.
Look at it.
K-I-L-T, Buster, but that wasn't the case. I get it. It hurt a little bit, buddy. And, hey, it happens, you know. He'll be back out there next week. Let me ask you this, though, Buster. Why did Theo Epstein step down after 9 seasons as the Cub president of baseball operations? Is there something waiting in the wings for him?
Well, eventually, for sure. But, you know, Theo has made it clear since he was with the Red Sox. He really believes that, you know, 10 years in his spot is good enough. That he was 9 years with the Boston Red Sox, and then he moved on to the Cubs. He's been 9 years with the Cubs, and he's moving on. And the timing is, I think, in part because the Cubs are, in the next 2 weeks, headed to this enormous crossroad in their journey. You know, they have all these decisions to make. They're going to slash their payroll dramatically. Yep. They're signaling to other teams. They're open for business, talking about everybody from Javier Baez to Yu Darvish, you know, questions about whether or not Chris Bryant's going to be tendered a contract. And Theo's feeling is, look, you know, knowing that his contract's up at the end of next year, knowing that they're at this crossroad, it's better for the Cubs to pick the guy who's going to have the vision moving forward, and that's Jed Hoyer, who takes over. Down the road, yeah, I mean, Theo, I think after taking off 2021, will wind up taking on another challenge. I've talked with friends of his. They think that he's more interested in a ground-up type situation, and I got to tell you, there are a lot of people around baseball who are looking at Nashville and saying,
what?
You know what, eventually there's going to be a team there where you're going to be building something from the ground up, and maybe that's what Theo has in mind. He talked yesterday about being interested in possible ownership.
Theo is the curse killer. He killed Boston's curse. He killed the Cubs' curse. Who's more cursed right now than the Mets? I mean, you talk about, you hear Cohen saying, hey, that he wants to invest in the upper office, the executives. We know that Sandy is the president of the entire organization. He wants to hire a president of baseball operations. I mean, is it a better marriage? He's going to have all the money that he needs to go out and get what he needs. He has a team that's not starting from the ground up. Why wouldn't the Mets be a perfect situation for Theo Epstein?
Well, first off, I don't know that Tom Ricketts, the chairman of the Cubs, would let Theo go with the year left on his contract if he knew that he immediately was going to dive into another organization. I think it's pretty clear from what Theo said yesterday, from what he's told friends, that he's going to take some time off. And I think that's the only way the Cubs would have let him to move on. Now, if a year from now the Mets don't have their, you know, head of baseball operations and their whole front office structure in place, then, you know, maybe Theo at that time becomes an option for them. I'm sure that they'll be making the phone call. Sandy Alderson will be making the phone call to Theo and say, look, we just want to double check. Are you interested in talking? I think it's more likely they go in another direction. David Forst, who's been the general manager of the Oakland Athletics, might be the guy at the top of the Mets radar right now.
But didn't Daryl Murray say the same exact thing when he left Houston like a week ago? I know it's a different sport, but didn't he say the same exact thing? And he popped up with the Phillies, I mean the 76ers, like the next week. And I think maybe they can work out a compensation package, maybe Dom Smith or somebody, you know, to the Cubs.
You know, that's always a possibility, but I really don't expect that to happen. Everything I've heard, and as I mentioned, I don't think Theo is looking to immediately dive into a situation where the team is on the cusp. I think he's more interested in going from the ground up, and also ownership. There, you know, there are a lot of baseball franchises that had trouble this year financially. Theo is someone who's so well known, and he has so many contacts. I'm sure that if he got an indication that he could be an owner someplace, he probably could raise a ton of money in about 24 hours. Like, he knows a lot of people with money. I think that's more likely that type of situation than going to the Mets or the Phillies.
All guests join us here on the Shell Pinzall Performance Line. What's next, though, when you look at Theo, right? We talked about all that, but is there something his career obviously isn't over with, but could he be the greatest manager in the history of the game, a general manager in the history of the game?
Yeah, and I think that he's going to hold that title no matter what happens moving forward. Like, if he were to be an owner of a team and then try to build ground up and that team didn't win, it doesn't matter. you can't beat what he's done as general manager. You know, he was the first one to climb the baseball Everest when the Red Sox won. He's the first one to climb the K2 when the Cubs ended their streak of 108 years. He's going to make a speech in Cooperstown someday, and he's going to be remembered as the greatest general manager of all time, no matter what happens from here on out.
Hey, you know, some people in the baseball circles believe that Theo Epstein, you know, there's analytics increased in the sport and people just feel like, you know, that was a major significant part, but he takes the blame for it. Is that fair?
Well, it was I think the most eye-opening thing that he said yesterday, Key, was in speaking with reporters, he talked about how he wants to help, in so many words, to improve the product. And I can tell you this. People around the game are really concerned about the direction of baseball, how in chasing analytics and trying to get every matchup advantage with every batter and this parade of relievers, there are a lot of people who feel like the product is becoming increasingly unwatchable with all the strikeouts and all the walks, home runs, but so much time between actual action in the game. And I would not at all be surprised if you're going to hear a lot more about this in the next year of folks in baseball trying to figure out, okay, what rules changes do we need to affect to make this more attractive to, you know, a 15, 16, 17-year-old who is, interested in, following sports and maybe that's the type of person we haven't been able to attract lately.
Is this still the same thing? Does this fall under, like, the shifting and all of that? Because I hate that. Like, growing up as a baseball guy, I hate all the shifting and you
hit
know,
it the
I
other way, like MT.
I don't like it.
I do think that's definitely something they've talked about. You know, there has been a refrain in the committee they've had about spikes on the dirt. They want to, perhaps limit players, infielders, to staying in the infield dirt. They want to talk about, infielders maybe staying on their side of the diamond, either to the right or left of second base.
Yes.
But somehow people around baseball really feel like they have to increase the action. They can't have 10 minutes between balls being put in play.
There's no doubt about it. We'll wait to see what happens with baseball moving forward. Commissioner Manfred is certainly looking to implement some changes. We'll see if they stick. And it's also important to note that the guy taking over in Chicago, Jed Hoyer, outside of a 2-year run as a general manager of the Padres, essentially has been in lockstep with Theo for 17 of the last 19 years. So we can expect maybe a little more of the same and a little bit different.
Buster. Let's go Dodgers.
Thank you, Buster.
Congratulations, Kate.
We'll see that for another 20 years.
We'll see you, man. Thank you very much.
See you guys.
One last thing I wanted to mention to Key's point. The 86-year curse for Boston, he ended it. And then the 108-year curse, he ended it for the Cubs. He's 46 years old. If he decides to go on a beach, buy a private island, and do nothing for the rest of his life at the age of 46 years old, as Buster said, at 46, he will go down as the most influential general manager in the history of our national pastime. That is something. On the way, is it possible? Is it possible the Miami Dolphins are in pole position to win the AFC East? The numbers you got to hear next.
Thanks for listening to Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin. Make sure to subscribe, rate, and review. You can hear the show live weekdays at 6 Eastern on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, or wherever you stream your audio.